This October, join Butwaitho in support of St. Jude Children's Research Hospital.
St. Jude is committed to transforming cancer care with the goal of curing at least 60% of children worldwide with six of the most common forms of cancer by 2030.
With your support, you will help St. Jude stay true to its life-saving mission, finding cures, saving children.
Donate to support the treatment of childhood cancer around the world at stjude.org/butwhytho. Again, that's stjude.org/butwhytho. Welcome back to Butwaitho, the podcast, and today we have a special episode talking to Zach Witten from St. Jude Play Live. As always, I'm your host, Kate, and I'm here with Matt.
Hello.
And Zach.
Hello, everyone. How y'all doing today?
Good, good. Happy to have you here.
I am stoked to be here. It is a lovely day where I'm in the country. Thankfully, I'm not near any fires, so thoughts and prayers go out to everybody out there that's dealing with that right now. I'm seeing some scary stuff from our friends out there.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I was in a work meeting earlier today, and everybody was just like, yeah, this is out my front door. I don't know if I'm in Dune or what. But luckily, we're here to not talk about the doom and gloom that is 2020 consistently, but to talk about something really good, and that's St. Jude Play Live. So Zach, why don't you kind of introduce your work with St. Jude Play Live, and why don't you let us know kind of how you got started and what its mission is?
Yeah, you guys are about to hear the story of what has been an absolutely terrible idea that has turned into a really awesome force for good, I hope. So my name is Zach. I work at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, where I have a very long and complicated title, which is Director of Innovation for Content Creator Development and Gaming, which basically it's a horrible, horrible long title. It barely fits on a business card. But what that really means is that I find awesome people on the internet who tell amazing stories, and I work with them to help tell the story of St. Jude and to convince audiences to support the life-saving mission that we do at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. For those that don't know, St. Jude is a pediatric research hospital based in Memphis, Tennessee, in the States. We take patients from all around the world. We take the hardest to cure cases. We bring them to the hospital. We do everything we can to send those patients home healthy and happy. And then we freely share all of our research around the world. So we are primarily a research hospital. All of our research is shared freely. And then when patients come to us, because we believe that in order for a patient to have the best chance, all they need to worry about is getting better. So patients never pay for treatment, travel, housing, food. Oh, and even beyond that, like, we will board their animals. We'll find jobs and help for their parents while they're here, like all sorts of stuff. We really believe that in order to have a chance, in order to be successful with some of these incredibly dangerous and deadly diseases, that you need to just focus on getting better. And so thanks to our 10 million active donors, we do that every single day. And my part in that story is, again, working with creators to help tell our story. And my story starts, dear Lord, I'm getting old, 8 years ago, 7.5 years ago, something like that, in the far, far away of like 2012, 2013. I was a web developer. I worked at a small design shop here in Memphis where I built web and interactive experiences back when you like could send somebody an interactive experience on a DVD built in Director or Flash. I used to do that stuff and build websites. And I moved over to St. Jude to build website experiences for them. And I was building basically all their websites in thon. So like Mathathon, Trikathon, the marathon itself, Walkathon, Rideathon, whatever you could do then in thon, I probably built that website. and all of those websites, I realized all those fundraising programs were predicated around either endurance athletics, so either wanting to do a walk or run or a bike ride or even do like a horse ride or hiking or swimming or whatever, or around having kids. So mathathon and trikathon are both around kids. There's a bunch of stuff we do in college kids. And I'm happily married. Kids are not really what my wife and I see in our future. And neither one of us are really stoked to go run a marathon. And so St. Jude really didn't have a whole lot for us in terms of peer-to-peer style fundraising, which is where you set up a fundraising goal and ask someone else to support you while you do a thing to fundraise. And at that same time, you know, 7 years ago, Twitch was still getting started. It was still Justin.tv. And we would sometimes come in and we would see $50,000 in our PayPal account from some random event that had been held over the weekend. Like we had a group that did a Mario Maker event for us. Not Mario Maker, like a Mario Marathon event where they went and played through all the Mario games in a weekend and raised $50,000. Actually, I've gone and done my research. It turns out the first ever speedrunning video game marathon benefited St. Jude. Back in 2014 or something, like 2010, somewhere in there. Even before the GDQ got started, a group called the Speed Gamers ran all the Zelda games every weekend and raised $1,200 for us.
Wow.
So looking at that stuff, we realized that there was an opportunity to kind of build the tools and the services that gamers needed to be able to fundraise for the kids of St. Jude. So I kind of stopped doing the job they were paying me to do, and I started doing this other job where I was basically making up what's essentially business development and fundraising. And keep in mind, like, I was an interactive guy. Like, I have a degree in interactive video game design. I build interactive experiences for my bread and butter up to that point. And I was suddenly going into fundraising business development, not really knowing what I was doing. And kind of stumbled through it, and no one told me no, mostly I think because they were so confused by what I was doing that they were like, sure, yeah, video games, people watching them online, how do people make money doing that? I was like, just trust me, we're gonna do this. And it was myself and a copywriter and another developer launched the program in 2013, and we raised $500,000 our first year off of a small investment from St. Jude. And I kind of really stopped doing my day job at that point. And since then, in the 6.5 years, like 7 years now, we've raised more than $30 million for the kids of St. Jude through amazing content creators all over the world. We've got donors from 100 countries that donate to our gaming programs, fundraisers, like active involved fundraisers from more than 40 countries. It's an amazing community of people that fundraise through St. Jude Play Live. It's primarily based in Twitch, but that's like saying, you know, audiences are primarily based on Twitch. Any place you can find someone that's talking to a live audience, you can find us doing things. We do activations on Facebook, Facebook Gaming, formerly Mixer stuff. Miss you guys. And then YouTube Live. We're doing a whole bunch of stuff now with podcasts. Podcasts are an amazing, amazing like community and experience. Like, we regularly debate inside of our team whether or not podcasts qualify as media or influencers, because they're this wonderful like hybrid of both, where you're absolutely media in the terms of like traditional like magazine style media, but also it's very much so like personally influenced and curated and put together. So we kind of view podcasts as like multi-headed influencers that are coming together to tell amazing stories. And so now I work with a team of six other people to find amazing creators and to help the kids of St. Jude by getting those stories told. I live an incredibly blessed life. I used to travel 100 plus days out of the year, going to shows and meeting with people all over the world to help grow this program. And 2020 kind of put a stop to all that. But weirdly enough, we ended up our last big fundraising season. So our fiscal year, St. Jude, runs July to June. And we ended this last year raising more than $12 million, which is crazy considering that was in the middle of both all of the social upheaval and the height of COVID, which is still going on right now. But like, this is when everything was shutting down and we were like, we're going to be dead. Like, rightly so, because we're a discretionary income charity. Like, people help us out when they have, you know, the time and energy to spare. And we're always blessed with those gifts. But, you know, you got to take care of yourself first. And sure enough, people were still doing amazing, amazing things for us. And we had our biggest year ever this last year. And I really think it's because there is this amazing community bond between a community and the content creator and the content that they build together. Because something like Twitch is very much so a mutual creative process where you have the creator that's putting the content out, but then the audience reacts to it in real time, and the creator gets to get that feedback and interpret it and then adjust it. And it's kind of this beautiful cycle of give and take that makes something that both sides feel ownership of. And then when you have a creator that says, we as a community are going to support X, Y, or Z charity, that impact is incredible. Because the audience feels, first off, like the community desire to show off and say this is how strong and important we are. I think like a good example is it's like showing off, you know, your audience reach for advertisers. It's that same sort of thing of like, this is how big our community, this is how big our people behind us are. This is why we are important. And you get to do that by making the world a better place. And every single gamer out there, like even if they're, you know, coming up now where gaming is the largest, you know, entertainment medium in the world, everyone still has that chip on their shoulder of like, ah, you're the loser in your parents' basement playing these games. And that hasn't been true for, you know, 15, 20 years now, but it's still kind of that pervasive, like, nerd thing. And I think the gaming community especially want to show the world that they can be a force for good, that they are not the way the media depicts them as, you know, these kids in these dark basements playing these violent video games, but in fact they're a very rich and compassionate and giving community. And when they do that together, there's this desire to do more and more and more. And then you take in the live component of it where, you know, if you give and then I see you give and I see the content creator call you out, I didn't want to be called out. I want to have my name said by the creator. And so I will donate to make that happen. And the person next to me sees that, then they want to give. And we're doing it all together as this shared community of friends. And suddenly, like, we feel this amazing, like, social power come from all of us working together to make the world a positive place. Like, it's honestly beautiful. And I kind of wish that more people would take advantage of it because...
Yeah.
It's such an amazing thing, and I am just one small fish in a very, very large pond. There are something like 400 other charities active in this space, and I love seeing them have the success that they're having right now, because that means that they're teaching young people how to use their voice and their power to make the world a better place. And if anything's going to come out of Twitch, I hope that that is that thing.
That was probably the most powerful monologue I've heard about gaming for good. I just want to say, I feel all warm and fuzzy inside.
Oh, gamers, we're awesome. Like, do you ever see the stats on like people, like gamers that play truly evil characters in video games? Like, no one actually does it.
No. Oh wow!
You look at the closest you get are things like the Renegade Path and Mass Effect, where it's like you can kind of be that like that ballsy like I'm gonna take no guff from nobody. I'm gonna go my own path. It's not truly evil. It's just like I don't want to listen to what you're telling me to do. But when you give someone a truly evil path, no one picks it because no one wants to feel bad because we are deeply empathic and caring creatures, and we don't like to inflict harm and pain on other. In fact, we like to do the opposite. We like to help each other. We are naturally inclined to be helpful. And I think that, you know, gaming, especially when you're getting a community involved with it, shows that we can get all sorts of positive, you know, endorphins running around our brains to make the world a better place.
Matt, did you want to ask the next question, or is that me? That was really beautiful.
I guess for me, I mean, saying all that in that long, impactful monologue, what is something PlayLive has accomplished that you're most proud of out of all that stuff that you said? I guess what's your one shining moment you always think about?
Oh, Lord. It's weird because there's the professional accomplishment and then there's the personal accomplishment. And then you have to realize that everything I'm about to say is not actually me. I am just the facilitator. This is going to sound real weird. I am the canvas upon which everyone else gets to paint their art. And I don't mean literally me. I mean that I am the guy that like gets the canvas and gessos it up and puts it up and stretches it for the artist to come in and paint it. I enable everyone else to do their amazing work. I enable, like, you know, this whole crew has enabled Dr. Lupo to be the person that has raised more through video games than anybody else in history. Like, Ben Lupo has raised something insane, like $6 million, which puts him as an individual fundraiser, I think. Like, I know for a fact he's the biggest person in gaming. He may be the biggest single charitable fundraiser in all of influencer space, period. Then you have, like, the people, the amazing team that we work with at GuardianCon, which is now GCX, they've gone on to raise, you know, $11, $12 million. And every year we would go back and forth with Games Done Quick. So we have an event in summer, and we would be either directly before or directly after them. And whichever one of us came first would set the new record. And then the other event would happen, and they would beat that record. And so we had this beautiful little, like, thing that would happen between us and them, where whichever one went first would set a brand new record, then we would break that record, or they would break our record. It was great. And so, like, watching that happen, being able to say, like, we were, like, we have raised more than any other charity event in history, and then have that be a true fact, and then have that true fact no longer be a true fact because a week later they broke our record. and stuff like that's great. But then I think about, there is a female broadcaster named Oh My Mandy, who is not active anymore because she is in school. She is getting some sort of crazy chemistry / biology / super science degree to learn how to make, like, medicines of the future. And she never had a huge community. I don't even know if she was ever partnered, but she raised something like $60,000 for the hospital. Just because she found that right way to tell our story. And I look at what she did every single, like, week or month, and I think about it because there's always something to learn in how someone else tells your story. And if there's anything that I am proud of in this, it's that I have enabled so many diverse creators to tell why our story matters to their audience. And seeing the work that researchers and doctors and nurses and staff have done at the hospital reflected back to us through someone else's lens is always just, it's incredible. Like, you don't really think about the fact that, like, you think about St. Jude and you think about the, you know, the beautiful, like, bald cancer patient, that we see and we think about, because that's when you think about pediatric cancer, you think about that patient. But then you have to realize that we also have, you know, 1300 other open research lines and diseases all across the spectrum. Like, we're one of the largest centers for pediatric HIV AIDS in the U.S. We do work with sickle cell, we do work with hemophilia, we do work with the flu. Like, we are now setting up to be supporting partner to testing some of these flu vaccines or COVID vaccines that are coming around. It's amazing to know the breadth of what we do and how every single person that we work with finds what matters to them in the huge amount of work that we do, and then they focus in on that and they tell that story to their audience. Because one of the things I love most about content creation is that if you are looking for something specific, it's out there. And even beyond that, you're able to find it in a face that looks like your face. You are able to find someone that has that very specific, like, I really love kaiju. Like, this is me personally right now. Like, I'm talking to you right now wearing a Becky Cloonan Gigan like shirt that Mondo printed out a couple weeks back, months back. It's one of my prized possessions. But this is, like, I'm a huge Godzilla nerd. And I realize I'm talking to you right now as a, you know, white bearded 30 something dude, the most common person on the internet. But if I was not that, like, I could find someone out there that was producing content that looked like not me. And I could find them and I could listen to them and I would feel that community and that camaraderie with them because they're telling the story of the content that I wanted to hear. And that's, I love it. I love it. I went to VidCon a couple years back, and I don't know if either one of y'all have gotten an opportunity to go to VidCon. It is the most random show, but it is also, if there were literally hundreds of young non-white girls running around the show floor with their, like, cell phones or their little, like, point and shoot cameras running in video mode on their sticks, just running around creating content. And I looked at all of them and I was like, oh my God, the future of this industry is so much broader than it is right now. Like, all these questions and these doubts and concerns that we're having right now, just like, give it time, because the next generation is there, but they're so young, but they're getting started with technology and these tools so much sooner than we ever got started. Like, I'm old enough. I'm Oregon Trail generation, like millennial, where like I still remember the sound of like a dial-up modem. I can hear it in my head as I say this sentence.
Oh man!
And imagine like you are 6 years old and you've had an iPad since you were four, and you know how to inherently use like the editing tools inside of TikTok or whatever to make whatever content you want, and you've been making short films for social media since you were five. And give that person 10 years and they won't even be able to legally drive, and they'll be able to tell a better story in video format than people that are out there working professionally right now can. And that's the future I'm excited about, is that diversity and breadth of content, and seeing what everyone else does when they're given the opportunity to really show off.
That's amazing. And then I think that kind of goes into my next question, which is how does PlayLive partner with creators? Do they come to you? Do you come to them? What does that look like? And what are some of the things that people do to help raise money?
A lot of it is kind of like an all-you-can-eat buffet, where it sort of is everyone has different tastes and flavors and textures and things that they like, and their communities like different things and they want different things and need different things. And so we are kind of an all-you-can-eat buffet, where it's like we have literally every food imaginable. We're not just an all-you-can-eat buffet. We are like one of those obscene Vegas buffets where they have like Indian next to Mediterranean, next to Singali, next to this, next to that. It's like, where did you get all these types of food? Because we know that's what communities need. And the same way we talked about like diversity as a creator that are coming up in the future, right now, like every single community is different. Every single community responds to a certain way. Every single community has their mix of like sad and funny and intense and light that they need to have, because that is what they're known for. And so we work with creators by basically saying, what do you need and how can we work with you to produce something that is worthwhile to your community? Because really, when a creator decides to work with not just us, but any charity, and if there's charities listening to this, I hope they understand this. Like, when a content creator decides to work with you, they're giving you, one, a gift of their time, because they have to produce and edit that content with you. Two, the gift of their audience, in terms of, I'm giving you access to this audience that I have carefully cultivated over years of content creation. I have spent, sleepless nights making sure that I'm producing the best possible content for. And three, you're giving us future monetization that you're basically not getting. It's an opportunity cost, right? So by you putting this episode with me on the show out, you are potentially like harming like future like search results and ad results, because I'm just a random guy. I'm not your normal episode. And like the gift that you are giving us right now and the kids of St. Jude is incredible, because you're opening up your platform and sharing our mission with your audience. And I can't be more grateful for that opportunity. And so when a creator comes to us, it's basically the question is, how can we help you? And whatever they say, the answer is cool. Let's see what we can do with that. It's not always a yes, because sometimes like I can't help people that want to jump out of airplanes and do fundraisers around that. Like there are literally certain lines that I cannot cross for legal reasons. But within that sort of like the limitation of like extreme self-harm or like, hard R kind of like content, we're able to do a whole bunch. And so on the foundational level, we offer up tools like overlays and audio spots and video spots and graphics and all sorts of things that you can use for your fundraising, either through a podcast or through a live stream or through YouTube content that you can use and help share our mission with your audience. And if there's stuff you're looking for that's custom, we're happy to work with you and help deliver that too. We work with something like 1,800 different creators or channels or however you want to consider it every single year. And there are no one of them is the same as any one of the other ones. So every single one is different and every single one is important. And that's why we have that team that sits behind the scenes, making sure that whatever you need to pull off some grand idea that you have, that we're there to support that and make that happen, because you're giving us not just a single gift, you're giving us three gifts, and we need to respect that. And we need to do everything we can to make sure that happens. So in terms of how people can take advantage of that, easiest way is just to find us wherever we are. We're at playlive.saintjude.org on the web. We're at St. Jude Play Live on Twitter. We have an active Discord, which I think should still be discord.gg/saintjudeplaylive, unless something's happened with our Discord, because Discord's doing a whole bunch of changes right now. But the Twitter is the easiest and best way. And then from there, we can guide you down any path you want to go. Our DMs are open. We're all active and available. And we want to hear from you. We want to know how to help you guys create what you want to create, because we need to be, we don't get to do what we do without everyone else. We are facilitators and enablers. Y'all are the people that make the magic happen. And you make it happen for some really, really sick kids and some parents that are scared to death that they're not going to be able to see another birthday or Christmas with their kid. And I'm happy to do whatever it takes to help that happen.
Awesome. That's just, oh, that's a lot.
I'm gonna be honest. Everything you're like, every time you finish talking, I'm like, oh my god, that was really powerful. Damn, it's like you do this for a living.
It's, I've been lucky enough to grow up in Memphis and around the hospital, and there's like, I've always known about St. Jude, right? And
yeah,
everyone sort of, we do a good enough job with our brand. Our brand recently crossed over to what we, like, by the marketing metrics call iconic status. But to me, like, that's all fine and good and awesome for our marketing teams to work so hard to get that. But like, I think we've been there for years, because every single time we talk about St. Jude, every single time we go to PAX or TwitchCon or wherever, and we'll get back to those shows soon enough, you have someone that you'll talk to at a show. It's like, oh yeah, my cousin was treated there, or my aunt, or my, you know, my niece or whatever, like, somehow our research impacted you. And while we are that hospital in Memphis, Tennessee, like, we also have 170 partner sites around the world. We have people that we work with in Washington that's, it's their job to help us facilitate like near overnight visas. Like, you know how hard it is to travel around the world right now? We have people in DC that it's their job. If we identify a kid in India that has a brain tumor that we can help them, we can put that person on a plane from Delhi, India to Memphis, Tennessee, and within 48 hours they will be in treatment. And that doesn't come without a huge team of effort to make it happen, but also those active supporters that enable us to, you know, to help pay for those lawyers and help pay for that plane ticket and help pay for those expedited visa stuff, like visa paperwork. It's crazy. Like, perfect example. I'm going to tell a story if that's okay.
Yes, 100%.
We have these, what are called like patient moments, where we have a patient that comes and talks to us as an employee gathering at work. And this was a 7-year-old boy. He had an inoperable brain tumor. And when I say inoperable, I don't necessarily mean like he can't be helped because he's out of treatment now. It just means that we can't put a physical knife to the tumor. We have to use things mm-hmm. like chemotherapy or radiation to help treat him. And he told us this story about how he was excited to start first grade. But the problem is that he was 7 years old and he had already done first grade. And that had happened because when you go through radiation treatment for a brain tumor like he had, it massively impacts your short-term memory. So he was basically unable to form short-term memories, which would become long-term memories, over the last year and a half that he was in treatment for his brain tumor. So he knew that he had experienced Christmas and Thanksgiving and his birthday because there were pictures and he had presents and he had this weird vague sensation that he had gotten a cake, but he didn't remember what he had learned in school that year, didn't remember what he had done the day before. And so he had basically lost a year of his life. And there is that horrible calculus of, we had to take a year of that young boy's life in order to save him. And then the hospital like was seeing that as like, you know, we can treat these patients, and they decided that that wasn't good enough. Like when we started, when we opened the hospital, the overall cancer survival rate was just 20%. So one in five patients made it and the rest did not. And for the most common form of pediatric cancer, type of leukemia, the survival rate was only 4%. So your treatment protocol for the most common form of leukemia back just 60 years ago, 70 years ago, was here's some pain medication, enjoy your last days or weeks with your child. And so the hospital has been founded on the notion of, like, one, curing those, like, what were thought to be incurable diseases, and then two, ensuring that the treatment doesn't do more damage than the disease. And so in this case, the hospital looked around and there was a thing called proton beam therapy, which we didn't invent it. It already existed out there in the wild, but it was used to treat, let's call them profitable cancers. Things like prostate cancer, where if you're rich enough, you can afford to keep a knife away from your genitals by having a laser do it. And but then the sort of thing is like radiation therapy is multiple times a week for an intense period of time. And this proton beam therapy like wasn't being used for pediatric use. And so our hospital decided that we were going to build one. And our donors came up and we paid, you know, $180 million in cash for a state-of-the-art research facility that's been open and working for the past few years. But the thing that it does, and this is why this is so important, is because think about the brain as like, it's going to sound weird, it's like a Jell-O mold. Like, imagine it is like a Jell-O mold and there's like a piece of pineapple inside of that Jell-O mold. And that pineapple is the tumor. But it's at the dead middle of the Jell-O mold and you can't get to it. And if you were to use traditional radiation, it's just... it's like holding up a flashlight. The light's going to go in. It's going to illuminate the piece of pineapple, and it's going to go all the way out. But when it does that, it hits all that stuff coming in and all that stuff going out. So you're hitting good tissue as well as bad tissue. And with the proton beam therapy, we're able to target where that beam of energy stops within 3 millimeters. So basically like the width of, of a pencil lead. So... using, like, you know how 3D printing work, where it, like, builds up those slices and layers to build a 3D shape? We're able to 3D print, like, decaying protons around this tumor and pinpoint where the radiation goes and find the shallowest angle to make sure it hits the least amount going in and absolutely nothing coming back out. And so with just that treatment, we're able to cut down something like 60% of the backsplash radiation that was impacting things like the short-term memory that that kid was experiencing. And so... that's an investment that we decided to make because it wasn't good enough that we were able to cure that kid, but we had to take a year of his life. We need to be able to ensure that when patients come to us with these diseases, we're able to give them a life that is, you know, worth living and is just as good as the life that they came to us with. We have a, we don't like patent for profit any of our research. We will protect it in terms of not, because we freely publish all of our stuff, right? So if someone wanted to go and like make stuff happen off of our research, they could. But we do protective patents in terms of saying like, yeah, we developed this medicine, we own it, but we will give that research to you if you agree to produce the drug. But we also were part of a project where we developed, do you guys know what Chinese finger cuffs are? Those like wicker like things you stick your fingers in and you pull them. So imagine you are a 14-year-old gymnast and you are the floor mat is your specialty and you take a tumble one day like normal fall, but you feel something that feels like someone punched you in the side of your leg. And you get a big bruise that shows up and the pain doesn't go away. You start to get feverish and nauseous. You go in and your doctor tells you that you have osteosarcoma. So a bone cancer in your femur, the largest bone in your body. And normally the way that is treated is you irradiate all of the bone marrow in that area to kill it all. And then you cut out the bone around it that has grown and become cancerous. And then generally because there is no support at that point, keeping your muscle around the bone because the support structure of the bone is gone, the whole leg is generally taken. And you know, at that point you're a 14-year-old girl and your life has been doing gymnastics. And that wasn't a good enough treatment for our doctors. And so they developed this mesh, which sits at the two ends of the healthy bone and ensheaths like the nerve and bone marrow cluster inside of it. And then as the patient grows, as their muscles expand, the other leg grows with normal human growth, the mesh expands and is firm enough to hold everything in place. So while, you know, they will not be able to go back and compete at the level they would before, you know, that girl will be able to walk at her high school graduation. She'll be able to dance at her prom, dance at her wedding. She'll be able to swim in the ocean with her kids and keep both of her legs. And that's the sort of stuff that we do at St. Jude. And so that's why it's so important, because there's a point where you have to want to invent the future and make it a better place. And St. Jude is one of those places that said, like, you know, we are going to make things better for everyone because we can and because we should. And thankfully, like, those stories that I'm telling you right now are stories that our creators connect with, and then they find their own versions of those. Every single streamer that we've worked with, every single podcast, every single YouTuber, each person has their own thing. Because I've just told you two stories, and those are two stories out of a hospital that's been around for 50 plus years. And every single day there are hundreds of those stories. And I think one of the things I tell people is that, when you donate to the hospital, you are funding a slice of time for that hospital. And I think someone did the math, and at one point it cost us $25 a second to keep the hospital up and running. And that seems crazy, right? Like, absolutely bonkers, like $25 a second. But, you know, that's $25 a second that pays for treating, you know, thousands of patients and keeping their families in, you know, our long-term stay facilities, but also all those clinics around the world. It funds freaking particle accelerators we use to do the proton beam therapy. It funds we actually create our own chemo drugs on site at the hospital. It funds all of that. And when you're able to donate just $25, you get to say that I owned a second of St. Jude. And the cool thing about that is, when you say that, it means you also have enabled every single other second that comes after. And it's kind of like crowdfunding, where you get to say, I made this happen. If it wasn't for me, because we can never skip a second. We can never have one of the seconds where it's not paid for. Because if we have that, then we can't treat, we can't do a research, we can't do what we do. And so when you have that 1 second, when you've donated and you've given that 1 second, you've enabled everything that comes after. You get to say, I am the reason that the scientists at St. Jude discovered that you could use the protein sheath from HIV AIDS as a vector to deliver a cure for bubble boy disease, which is something we did last year. I have enabled the patients at St. Jude to realize that they can use literal protons to cure cancer, proton laser beams to cure cancer. I have enabled this, that, or the other to happen. And it's true. It's completely true. It's just it's an awesome thing. Yeah, I'm rambling now. I don't really know where I'm going anymore.
No, I mean, and it's really good to hear, because I think one of the reasons some people may not know, people may know the name of a charity or a research institution, but I think sometimes they miss the human piece and the physical piece, like what is actually being done. So I think it's really important to share those stories. Going off of that, because you talk about St. Jude so passionately, and as you've explained, you've been there for quite some time and have been able to lead some innovations in how, you know, St. Jude works with different partners and for charity and stuff. I want to ask you, because you told us how you started at St. Jude, but what made you go to St. Jude? Like, what made you get involved with this as your career path, with St. Jude as your career path?
I would love to tell you that it was completely altruistic and I did it because it was a large passion of mine, and that would not be true. I worked for a small design shop in Memphis, and my boss was the kind of guy that had, like, there were 10 employees. We all sort of worked on all the same stuff, and it was a great little family. But there's, you know, kind of a limit to how big a shop like that can grow. We were blessed to work with, you know, Fortune 100 companies and small art schools and, James Beard award-winning restaurants and the whole nine yard. Like, it was great. But it was also like I kind of had grown to the limit of what our clients could reasonably afford in terms of interactive stuff, and I wanted to make a change. And St. Jude was sort of that place. Like, they tell you that millennials like value like making the world a better place is like the number one factor for their employment like options. And yeah, it absolutely was for me. Like, I liked the notion of going to work for a place that was going to make the world better. But also I wanted to do more. I didn't mean to do what I'm doing right now. Like, again, like we talked about this being like a, you know, the best bad idea. This is a completely bad idea. Like, I would, you know, not equipped to do what I'm doing right now, kind of stumble my way into the success. I went there to just build bigger and better websites, really. And then no one told me that I couldn't do this, and so I kept doing it, and it kind of went from there. But yeah, it was just a good place to work, and they had the opportunity for me, and I wanted to try something different. And then, if there's one thread that you can pull from this, it's that a lot of times when you're young, people will tell you that, oh, you need to have a vision for where you want to go in life and what you want to be and do, and like have a plan.
Yeah.
I will counter with that. I think that's absolutely not a good idea. Instead, I will say that the best thing you can be in life is flexible and adaptive and always looking to make a positive change in the short term for yourself. 'Cause my history has been, like, I went to art school to make video games. I worked in the game industry for a little bit. Like, it didn't work out for me. The game industry is a terrible place to be, like, a rank-and-file employee. It is so much work, yeah. So much contract work, so few stable gigs, so many long hours. And I left that and went into advertising, which, you know, because that's way more stable and not just as horrible and abusive. But in terms of going from, like, learning how to make games, to learning how to market stuff, to learning how to ask people to help a cause. My career has not been a straight path by any stretch, but every single part of it added up to make something better. In a weird way, I'm like a layered cake. Or like that layer of raspberry that I have in my career path really makes the whole thing tie together. And in this case, it's like the fact that I have the history in the game design industry and have a history knowing how to market stuff added to my ability to go and do this. And without those things, you know, you wouldn't have the ability to do all these other things. And so I say to people that are out there, like, don't think that you have to have a path, have a direction, and then go in the direction of the favorable winds. Let them follow you and be adaptive and responsive to them. But don't feel like you have to, you know, only go in one direction.
I think to kind of go off of that question, being flexible and adaptive and everything, has PlayLive had to do any adjusting for all of the chaos of 2020?
Oh, absolutely.
How has that been?
every year we would do the St. Jude PlayLive Summit, which was we would bring all of our top fundraisers down to the hospital to see what they were working on in person. Our goal was to get every single person that had supported us at the hospital at some point. And then every year we pick a group of people, bring them down to the hospital. And this year was going to be 320 odd people coming to the hospital to see what it's supposed to be. I think it was going to be the largest gathering of Twitch partners outside of like TwitchCon. It was supposed to have happened the last weekend in April. And I think the first week in March, we sent out the email saying that this wasn't going to happen. Everyone was totally understanding, especially, you know, obviously we work at a hospital. Like, I literally work on the grounds of the hospital. I haven't seen them since the first week in March. But like, you know, we obviously everyone understood. So that was great. Community is awesome. But at that point you're like, okay, so what do we do now? We just took away the biggest connection point for our audience. How do we get it back? And so we pivoted and we created this awesome St. Jude PlayLive challenge box, which was, you know, this, imagine like a souped up loot crate that had you know, a custom t-shirt and like fundraising ideas, information about the hospital, like all this stuff. And it was mostly meant to let people feel a connection to the hospital and that we were thinking about them. And the response was fantastic. And, you know, we raised $3.4 million this year through St. Jude Play Live, considering last year we raised $2 million, and that was a huge jump up. Like, jumping up by more than, like, 66% or something like that was crazy. It was nuts. especially wow. in the midst of all this. And then beyond at that point too, like we work at, on GCX, like that is a show that we are deeply involved with. And same time we're canceling Summit, we're talking to the guys at Rare Drop that run GCX and trying to figure out what we're supposed to do with a 10,000 person show in Orlando, Florida that was going to happen the third weekend in June. And, you know, contracts are written, checks are in the air, like stuff's happening, and we have to back off on all that. So this year has been very, very challenging, and I think the response that we have had is miles beyond anything that we expected. The way people have responded yeah. to not just us, but to everything out in the charity space has been incredible. I think people know that we are kind of on this cusp of we have to put up or shut up. And the notion of shutting up in the face of so much adversity and change is unconscionable. Yeah. And so people are going to make the world a better place. At least that's my hope.
So now that we've talked a lot about St. Jude and Play Live and what you do there, we do want to ask a little bit about what you're watching, reading, listening, the pieces of pop culture that you've been leaning on and utilizing during lockdown, during quarantine, because I think that that's something that a lot of people like these kinds of recommendations. I am a lot of people. just let us into your pop culture bubble for a little bit.
Oh boy, this is a beautiful cornucopia of nerd inside of my brain. I literally am a degreed nerd. Like I said earlier, my degree is in video game design. So I think that games are always near and dear to me. I wanted to make games since I was a kid. Back when it was like old school, like I had visions when I was 12 of learning how to speak Japanese, moving to Japan and working for Nintendo. But even then, I didn't want to work for Nintendo. I wanted to work for Square to play, like, I wanted to make Chrono Trigger games because I'm a huge RPG nerd. And so really in quarantine, I've been playing a lot of video games. So I've been digging through because everything is all messed up. Like games are getting pushed around, like left, right, up and down. Like we're weeks out from a console release and we still don't know full information about those things. and so like lots of Destiny, lots of WoW, lots of things where I just get to go and explore and feel like I'm outside. But also I like to play tabletop miniature games, which makes me a rarefied breed of uber nerd. and I have been slowly going through my stash of shame, which is, for people that don't understand, like when you buy a tabletop miniature to play, like either in a game like D&D or like Warhammer or anything like that, like it's unassembled either plastic or metal or resin. You have to assemble it and then paint it before it's supposed to be used on the tabletop, is like the culture goes, but that's not really the case. No one actually cares. And if they do actually care, then you don't want to be playing games with those people because they're not going to be fun to play games with. So I've been working through like my back stash and been painting stuff. So that's been fun. My wife has been dominating her TV, going through hours and hours of anime. She is a true deep weeb. I love her dearly, but our house is you can always hear the sound of an anime coming from some TV somewhere in the house as she's working on a project at the same time as watching anime.
That sounds so familiar to this household.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Like it's that sort of thing where like now our little shorthand is to just pop into a room where the other person is and start singing like the Bon Voyage opening from One Piece, because my wife is watching One Piece right now. And by say she's watching, I'm like, she is not current. She is like 400, 600 episodes behind or something. So,
but that means she still has already watched like 300 episodes, though.
Yeah. Yep.
And also, gosh. Like, I'm a, this is going to sound weird, I'm a wrestling nerd, but not through like, I didn't watch wrestling so I was born in like the early 80s. I didn't watch in the 80s or the 90s when I was like a young kid that's supposed to get into wrestling. and then I didn't watch it in like the early 2000s. I think it was like 2014, 2015, something like that, where a friend of mine had tickets to an NXT house show. And so for people that don't understand those words I just said, NXT is the developmental sub-brand for WWE, which is the biggest wrestling company in the world. And a house show is a show that they do. They basically go on tours like bands and they do shows. But at a house show, nothing actually matters. It's just like showing off the skill of the talent and selling some merch to the fans. But it's also the most fun you can ever have at a wrestling show because everyone just does silly fun stuff and the crowd gets really, really into it. And I'd never been to a wrestling show and they took me to this house show and it was like, the people that were on the bill that night are now at the very top of the WWE roster. Like, you're talking about current, like, champions, people that are face of the brand were, like, at that house show. Like, Finn Balor and Bayley and Samoa Joe and a bunch of people that I dearly love. And it blew my mind. And then from there, I have gone down a deep, deep rabbit hole where over the last week, every single weekend, there's been a wrestling pay-per-view that I have watched from, AEW to WWE to New Japan. Like, today, the G1 block for New Japan just got announced, and I lost my freaking mind because Japanese professional wrestling is, like, a level above anything else in the world, both in terms of talent but also storytelling. I sobbed my eyes out at the end of the G1 climax last year. And so, like, it, like, the questions, it was sort of like that we'd sent over before. It's like, what is your, like, pop culture? And really, like, the pop culture I want everyone to know about is Japanese wrestling, because it is, yeah, like, not even like the dudes are amazing and awesome. Like, New Japan is an amazing company, but like Stardom and like the oh, my brain is blanking out. The Joshi. Thank you. The Joshi wrestling that exists out there, like the storytelling that the women tell, it is so, so good. And because they're all, like, you know, 105 pounds soaking wet, they can do crazy stuff and catch each other because they're one hella strong and hella limber. But also, like, it's not like a 300-pound dude is crashing down on you and going to blow out your knees. Like, they can do crazy stuff, and it is amazing. And it's the best.
That's really cool.
I mean, I kind of had, we had kind of like our last ending question, but I don't know if I felt like you answered it of, I mean, you kind of talked about a bunch of pop culture stuff, but I mean, is that the one piece of pop culture that mattered to you over the most, or was there something else that you'd like to tell everybody
so
about?
This is going to be a weird turn to the episode, but the piece of pop culture that matters to me the most is fashion. And not because of actual, like, aesthetics, but because of how dangerous our current consumptive habits of fashion are. Like, fast fashion, and by fast fashion, I literally, like, I talked about how I'm wearing a Becky Cloonan, like, shirt from Mondo, like, on this phone call. Like, this shirt is fast fashion. It is a mass-produced T-shirt that was printed on a blank that was shipped in from somewhere in Asia that was produced at a factory that produces, like, tons and tons and tons of, like, what's essentially like self-destructing, like, apparel that will fall apart after a season, and the dyes and the chemicals and all that stuff that goes into to creating, like, the notion of Target having a different geeky T-shirt every single day is destructive to the environment in a way that I don't think people understand or have really thought about. Like, I encourage everyone to look up, like, the destructive environmental impacts of fast fashion and not stop buying the stuff that they want, but maybe just think about it and maybe don't buy that shirt because you think, that's cool, I'll buy that for $10. Maybe just wait and buy the next one that you think is cool for $10 and just try to cut your consumptive habits down, because, like, fast fashion is doing more damage to the environment and the world than, like, strip mining and oil and natural gas stuff all put together. It destroys more fresh water every single year than any other source of pollution. And it is become a societal trend as we've facilitated it. Like, it's the sort of thing where it didn't exist as a thing that you could reasonably do 35, 40 years ago, and now it's everywhere. Like, it's a thing that I want everyone to pay attention to, because I think it is the thing that has the biggest impact, like, to make the world a better place, because it affects all of us.
I feel so called out.
You should.
But in a good way, because so I didn't buy a lot of, like, anime shirts. I didn't have that much anime merch at all before quarantine. Now I get bored, and when I get sad, the serotonin I get from pressing buy helps that a little bit. So yeah. I have amassed a lot of anime shirts that are definitely fast fashion. So, and I did not know anything about that. So thank you for bringing that up, because whew.
And here's the crazy thing, too. So those anime shirts probably, with shipping, are around you, what, $25? Like, maybe?
Okay, question on fast fashion.
Yeah.
So for fast fashion, you're talking specifically about, like, the mass-produced, like, Hot Topic has 20 Studio Ghibli things, and they're doing it super, super fast, and that thing's going to fade off, versus, like, say, like, a boutique clothes where it's, like, maybe $40
so
instead of, like, a $10 shirt?
Even with,
are those different?
So even with the boutique, the question is, where did that garment come from? Like, because it's still printed on a blank. And that blank, 9 times out of 10, it may have a higher thread count and feel softer and probably wear just as quickly. Still coming from that same factory, still doing the same environmental damage.
Okay.
And so what I was going to say is, maybe, like, take like that same impulse to like go and buy one of those and like, all right, cool. Instead of buying 3 of these and feeling that dopamine impact, I'm going to find somebody that's doing like a custom tailored shirt, and I'm going to send them my measurements, and you're going to end up with a garment that'll last you longer, a garment that will look better on you, and a garment that will be easier to change and adapt as your body changes as well. And so instead of something that ends up in the trash, you'll have something that's actually like a cultivated piece of your life that travels with you and that is like kept with you, instead of just like, I don't need this anymore. It just goes away. It becomes like a thing that is you.
That's awesome.
So yeah.
Matt, I'm going to start buying custom tailored shirts with different
anime.
You're
just not going to buy anything.
You should do that.
We'll
that would be amazing.
We should not buy anything and we'll be all great.
The first time you put on a piece of tailored clothing, it blows your mind. It's like, wait, it's supposed to fit like this? Because
I've never had a piece of tailored clothing.
Oh, dear Lord. Like, yeah, it's incredible. I only know this because my wife is a, like, she sews, like, her craft is sewing. And so she has made me clothes, and it's been like, oh, shirts are supposed to fit like this.
That's awesome.
It's incredible. And it's not expensive. Like, just find a local tailor that's willing to work with you. And I guarantee you right now, your local tailors are looking for business, because people probably aren't coming in because no one's going to work look their business finest. So you can get a piece of garmentry that will probably last you for years, that looks great on you, and you'll feel good about buying it.
Awesome.
I told you it was a random turn.
It was, but we've talked about so much this episode. Like, seriously, thank you for coming on.
I'm stoked to be here. Thank you so much for sharing your time with me and agreeing to do this. This has been fantastic.
Nat, did you have anything else to say?
I just wanted to say, if you guys do ever get into fundraising for skydiving and jumping out of planes, please let me know, because I'd like to sign up for that.
For context, our third anniversary, Matt took me skydiving, and I realized how much he enjoys jumping out of planes.
Our lawyers are definitely not going to be okay.
But thank you so much, Zach, for coming on and talking with us, giving us your time, and sharing your story and St. Jude and St. Jude Played Live story. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on the internet, how they can get involved with St. Jude, and where they can find all the socials?
Yeah, so most important stuff here is you can get in touch with St. Jude at St. Jude Play Live on Twitter. You can join a Discord, which is discord.gg/St. Jude Play Live. Our website is playlive.stjude.org, and you can find out more about St. Jude in general. If you're not necessarily into gaming or live streaming or stuff like that, you can just go to stjude.org. There's a Get Involved tab, which will tell you how to get involved with everything that we do around the country and around the world to support the kids of St. Jude. We've got a big prize season that happens every May. With this dropping in October, the cool thing we're doing is what we call the St. Jude Play Live Creative Season, which is where we encourage, as the holidays kick in, like you're making your Halloween costume, you are baking Thanksgiving dinner, you are making Christmas presents, doing this, that, or the other. utilize the awesome community that is Twitch Creative and stream yourself doing some creative stuff on Twitch. And we've got some awesome prizes that you can earn. You can find out more by going to St. Jude playlab.stjude.org. Hooray, don't even know my own website. And for me personally, you absolutely should not follow me on Twitter because I'm a hot mess. But it's at Zachary Witten, which is just my name. I am the best idiot, hopefully, that you will actually follow. Thank you so much for this. The hospital exists because everyone else enables it to exist. We are absolutely the people's hospital. We do what we do because people give to a cause that they care about and because they want to make the future better. And so to everyone that's ever fundraised or told somebody about what we do or donated, given, you know, money or time or energy, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so very, very much. You made the world a better place, and you saved the lives of more kids than you can possibly imagine. So thank you.
So throughout the month of October, the hosts of But Why Though and our geek community are challenging listeners to donate. You can find more information about the rewards that you get when you donate by going to stjude.org/butwhythough. We really, really encourage you all to donate to this amazing cause. And I mean, Zach said it the best for us. You know, St. Jude is an amazing organization, and we are more than excited to be working with you guys this month. So as always, you can find us at But Why Though PC on literally every piece of social media, and you can find me at OmaMethrandir on Twitter. Matt?
And you can find me on Twitter at datm18, datm18.